Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 161 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I'm two, blah, blah, blah. Starting over again.
Okay. It's Madinger.
Yeah, Madinger.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 161 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. I am joined by my partner in crime, my backwards traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, how goes it?
Good, brother. Good. Happy to have our two guests back on again this week for a real special show.
Yes, absolutely. And as you can see from the shirts that Andy is wearing, this is going to be a Elton-related show, and you know, we were chatting about this, and our good friend Chip here had a great idea and to discuss Elton and some work that he's done with all four of the solo Beatles. So I figured, hey, why not? We all love, obviously, we all love Elton John, so we'll give this a shot. And as you can see, we got Chip Madinger and Mark Easter here, both. We all know them. We all know them for their love for their work on the Eight Arms to Hold You book. Chip and Mark, it's good to see you guys. And also, Chip's work on Lennonology right there. Yep. Chip, Mark, how you guys doing?
Hey, guys.
Hi there. Doing all right.
Doing all right. Glad. Thanks. Glad you guys are back, and we're going to talk about.
This is the first time we've done this. Like, yes. Where one person's on and one person's on a top. So this is a first time for Two Legs,
right? So we're going to try this out. Mark unfortunately had some internet problems, so he's on like a conference call here, and hopefully this is going to work out. So, but before we get to Elton and the Beatles, we're going to just continue some talk with Chip and Mark here. The Eight Arms to Hold You, as you know, this came out in 2000?
October
2000, and you guys just released an updated digital version, and that was already over a year ago now, right?
That was back in
2018. So wow, already 4 years, four years ago. So for the people that haven't listened to your last time that you guys are on, what did you guys do differently? I mean, how did you guys update this this latest version that's only available digitally?
Well, it was a process of going through and fixing any errors. And then we rewrote portions of it. So there's probably 30,000 new words in it on the electronic version.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mark, you guys worked together like you guys did originally with the original book?
Yeah. I mean, what we did was we just sort of looked at it from scratch, and I don't think either one of us had read it cover to cover since we originally put it out. So it had been 17, 18 years since we really dug back into it. And so that was fun in and of itself. And then, it was nice to see that it held up, even though all the, a decade and a half plus had gone by.
Right.
And so it was just an opportunity, as Chip said, to, fix some errors. And then the whole purpose, though, was not to necessarily update the book. So, it didn't, it still ends in 2000. Didn't change anything in that regard. But what we did to do was fix the errors. And then if there were, things that we had gotten a bit more information on since the original publication, we sort of tried to incorporate that information. And so it's built from the ground up, but it's still the same book, basically, if that makes sense.
There's quite a bit of new session information. And one thing that was different about this version than the original, we were head-to-head working on it. And this time, I think it was all completely on the internet.
Right.
Remotely, yeah.
I take it you guys probably got some new info from the McCartney archives that have been released, Pat, since the book has been released as well.
Those were worked in, the information from the archive series.
Gotcha. You know, songs like It's Not On. I mean, were you guys aware of that track before the Pipes of Peace archive came out?
I'm gonna plead the fifth on that.
Yeah, because I don't think it was ever bootlegged.
I don't remember. No, it hasn't been booted.
No. Right. Because it was really a surprise when that Pipes of Peace box set came out, and here's this song that's just like really crazy with big Paul kind of singing, and then you hear a woman's voice in the background, kind of like mimicking. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of the basis of Talk More Talk.
Right, exactly. Very true. So, listen, a lot of people didn't get a chance to get this. The only way they're going to get this is digitally now. Was there any talk of maybe, doing 1,000, 2,000 copies or anything like that? Or was it always just going to be a digital version?
It was always going to be digital. It was also going to be used to help promote the Leninology book.
Okay, right.
So that was one of my incentives for putting it together.
Right. Hey,
go ahead, Mark.
Book, but we knew we're not going to do any more physical copies of it. So why not put it out there, tweaked a bit, at a reasonable price, which is still is, compared to what it gets on the secondary market now. So, the information is out there for anybody who wants to purchase it from the website. So that was the purpose, really, was, making sure that information was still out there for anybody who wanted to purchase it and enjoy it.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Andy?
Yeah, no, just 2 points that, 20 years since original publication, that's a whole nother generation of Beatle fans that can discover your work. And if they do it digitally, then that's all the more power to them. And hopefully, you've seen that hopefully, over the last, especially since your revision, that's reached newer and younger fans. I would hope that a lot of people, you guys know your numbers and your figures. I hope it continues to do well.
Well, it will make it more available because the postal costs nowadays have basically cut the United States off from the rest of the world. So, it'll cost $40, $50 to ship that book. And, you see that when you're ordering online, it's like, I'm not going to pay that much shipping. They're ripping me off. Right. And,
Chip, right. is Leninology still available or are you out of all those too?
No, I've still got plenty of paperback copies. And I think there might be a few stray hardbacks that might have a ding or two on them, but they're still up on the site as well. Thanks.
Cool.
Gotcha. The way you guys presented the book, I really, love, how you go session by session and how it's written. Did you guys play around with the way you guys presented this book, or was it always the format that it was written in? I mean, did you guys play around with different ways to present this book?
I'll go.
You know, in a sense. What's that?
Do you want to take that one?
Oh, yeah, I could take. Well, basically, we went and wrote a book that we couldn't find anyplace else.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to have all this information in one place, and it just wasn't out there. So. And as for the design of it, it's going to be John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it, hopefully it was kind of intuitive, and then it was done in on a timeline. Right. So.
Right. No, that's because
it's going to be an integrated book where it was going to be a timeline with all four of them interchanged. That was never on the cards. No. That would have just been way too unwieldy.
Right.
So, yeah, it was always going to just be, the individual careers, covered one by one. So,
right. Yeah, no, I mean, I really like the layout, and it's kind of close to maybe what Mark did with the Beatles recording sessions, but it's still different as well. I like the fact that it is separate. I like the fact that you it's year by year, and it's perfect companion, especially for what we do. You know, whenever we want to say like do a show on Flowers in the Dirt, all we gotta do is just go to that sessions, and you're going to learn everything that that you can, you know, especially now with the revised version, since the Flowers in the Dirt box set came out. I'm sure you guys looked through that and, you know, and put any new information that you learned into that revised edition. So that's great. Anyways, where can we get, show that email once again, please.
It's Lennonology.com.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, you know, Amazon does sell stuff digitally as well. Was there ever any talk about maybe offering up on Amazon?
I think the Amazon roadblock was a formatting issue, that the whole book would have had to have been reformatted in order to get it in their electronic service.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. They
didn't realize
they rule as far as, you know, they're the ones who call the shots on how, you know, ebooks are presented. And I think they wouldn't do, because, you know, we were always going to be PDF. It was not going to be like an EPUB or anything like that. And I think that called the shots as well. But again, you know, if you know the website and, you know, we just try to put it out there as much as possible.
Right.
The website's a lot easier to remember than the original one for 8 Arms. I can't even remember that original book.
Well, there's usually something good going on over there, so come by and have a look. I redid it last year, and it top to bottom, and there's some neat content on there.
Gotcha. Before you guys, I mean, you guys haven't been on in a couple years. I don't recall if McCartney 3 was out yet, and that was kind of just, you know, before we get to this Elton in the Beatles thing, just get your impressions now that McCartney 3 is 2 years old now?
You know, almost.
A year and a half. You know, maybe, yeah. So Chip, we'll start with you, Chip.
I think we were on right when COVID hit. 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And as far as McCartney 3 goes, I have almost every conceivable color. But there are a couple I'm missing, but it's just one more, and then I'll have the full set. And, oh, now it's coming. Oh, it's just one more. So I've got stack of them, but I've only given the album maybe a 3 plays, and nothing really stuck with me on this. I had
really
high hopes, but man, there was just nothing there. I can tell you one song title. So
interesting. Yeah.
Do you want my take?
Mark? Yeah, yes, please.
I have such an issue at this point with Paul's voice quality, that really does get in the way of me being able to enjoy. I almost think it's time for Paul to concentrate on instrumental work. I would love to hear just a straight instrumental record from him in some way or shape or form, because I can't deal with the voice. I can deal with it live just because it's a different experience.
Right.
But it's just not pleasant to listen to be completely honest. I mean, I like Find My Way. I thought that was a good tune. That video creeped me out. I really had, it didn't help my appreciation of the song at all. But in terms of the rest of the record, it just, he had some interesting ideas. I applaud him for wanting to do something different again, and experiment and do, you know, things that he enjoys doing. you know, I don't gain a whole lot of pleasure from listening to it.
Gotcha.
So,
the know, marketing
really bothers me what he's done, what has happened to his voice. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough.
And the marketing of the album was really over the top. I mean, when you hear something coming out, there's a new, you know, going to be a new announcement from the McCartney camp, and it's, oh, what color are they going to put McCartney 3 in this time?
It was overkill. And when
it really was.
It was overkill, and Tom and I spent many an episode talking about this, and I kind of got burned out on it, and Tom not so much. I mean, I like the album, but. But it was overkill. It was just overkill, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and then to do that, whatever it was, you know, reimagined or whatever,
right?
And, you know, 6 months later, was just, you know, which was obviously planned at the time. There was no
it had to have been right.
It was just, I don't know, the whole thing's just really cynical exercise. I felt on something that should have just been more of an organic release.
Right.
I think I would have appreciated the record more had he just put it out, sort of put, you know, just like in the old days, you put out a record, you know. And yeah, it was just everything. Now it has to be this event, you know. It was the same way with Egypt Station, and I'm you know, feel similarly about that record, although his voice is a bit better on it. It's all about, let's get Paul a number one record at the age of 74 or 76 or so, you know, and
at Christmas.
The Christmas number one for the UK.
You know, and if I want to hear some Paul, I'm going to go play McCartney 2 or Back to the Egg before I choose to put McCartney 3 on again.
Fair enough. Yeah, like you, Chip, I think I'm only missing 3 copies of McCartney 3. So I woke up too late for that Third Man 333 version. I'm missing the Spotify Coke bottle and the Barnes & Noble Blue, and I think that I've got all the other ones.
I need the yellow one that came out later.
Yeah,
not the Third Man, the second Third Man, but just the plain yellow. I'm missing that.
Yeah.
And I'm missing the 333 release.
Right. Yeah, it was a lot of fun though. I mean, it was on the horn with Andy and my cousin and a couple other people, and it was just like every 10 minutes. Okay, now Barnes and Noble's is releasing one. Now Target's releasing one. You know, it was quite a day. Didn't get much work done, that's for sure. Anyways, but let's get on with our main topic, and this Elton and the Beatles, or Elton and the solo Beatles, whatever you want to call it. But Chip, this was a wonderful idea. Thank you for bringing this up and wanting to come back on and discussing it with us, because as we mentioned a little while ago, Andy recently got to see Elton a couple times, and then now Chip, you're getting ready to see him again. You said what? This will be your 13th time seeing him.
I think so.
Wow.
Do you remember the first time you got to see him?
Oh yeah, 1982.
Okay.
Under the St. Louis Arch, it was a free concert.
Oh wow!
And it was unbelievably hot, and so we were there with a cooler full of beer and sat there the whole day, and it was a great show.
I love that. Mark, do you remember the first time you got to see Elton live yet, Mark?
I was there for it would have been my first Elton show. But unfortunately, I got there at like 9 in the morning to get a decent seat. And Elton didn't come on until, I don't know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There was not a cloud in the sky. There was not a tree to be found. We were out of any sort of water, and I was suffering from heat stroke and had to.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I didn't get to see the Elton part. I saw Quarterflash. They were great.
Okay.
That other great Geffen act.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I haven't had the opportunity yet to see him. So I'm looking, he's coming back here to Arizona in November. And that's when my wife and I plan to see him. He's going to be playing at the baseball stadium at Chase Field. So we're looking forward to that. So, but for me personally, I mean, I was born in 73. I'm sure I heard him on the radio, you know, up until, you know, during the 70s. But it wasn't really until the MTV era where I discovered Elton John with songs like I'm Still Standing, you know, and stuff like that. And that's when I really started getting into his music, and then, you know, going back and discovering all that older music. Now, Chip and Mark, have you listened to any of his new music recently?
I keep up with the, okay. I keep the collection up, but the last one was his lockdown session.
Okay.
Album. It was full of collaborations, and it was even more full of auto tune. So, mm-hmm. you know, as much as I wanted to enjoy it, that one went on the shelf next to McCartney 3.
Oh no. What about the one previous? What was that called? Wonderful Crazy?
Wonderful Crazy Night.
Yeah, Wonderful Crazy Night.
That was good.
There was some good stuff on that.
Okay.
It's the box set that will fit nowhere.
Oh, the diamond set?
Hotel. No, oh,
not the jewel set.
Not the jewel set, but the one for Wonderful Crazy Night.
Oh, for the album, oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I did get the To Be Continued four CD box set when it came out. I think it was 89 or something like that. And that was a lot of fun just going back and, you know, discovering all of his music and then getting some of the 60s stuff on there, too, that, you know, a lot of people hadn't heard until to that Record Store Day release. I think that came out last year. That was really good. So, Elton also has one thing that he can say that only a small amount of people can say, and that is that he's performed live with all four of them as solo musicians. And that's going to come up quite a bit here. I think maybe Billy Preston can say he's performed with all of them live. Eric Clapton can say that. Not too many people can say that they performed with all four of them.
I think Elton was the first one to hit the Grand Slam.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. And then also, I think it was probably Billy and Eric Clapton would probably be the only ones that recorded that with them as a group and performed live with them as well. Eric, I think, has performed with all of them solo, performed with them as a group, and recorded with all of them as well. So. So we can maybe do a part two with Eric Clapton on this, you know.
Oh, there are a lot more of those.
Yes, there are. So I figured we break this up into individual. You know, we can do this like the Eight Arms to Hold You book, and we can start off with John here. Obviously, John has the most of most work with Elton John. And, you were talking about, you know, looking back and seeing where, because I really didn't do this a lot. I didn't know a lot of these until, you know, we were doing some research on this. And Andy, you brought the one up with Paul that we'll get to that in a little bit. But I would imagine that his first work with John then would be Whatever Gets You Through the Night.
They met before that. He met, and I only read Elton's bio a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So he met when John was doing promotional work for Mind Games with Tony King. And if you've seen that video clip of Tony King dressed up as the Queen, John is in the video with Elton John.
Right.
And that's like November of 73. So that's when they actually first met, even though obviously Whatever Gets You Through the Night was later. But that's when the two of them really first met. Out when John was out, just first went out to LA when he separated from Yoko, from what you know, everything that I've read.
Okay.
Well, Philip Norman in his bio of Elton, he mentioned that Elton had seen the Beatles at one of their Christmas runs, but he didn't specify the year.
Okay.
And this information came from Melton's cousin, Paul Robinson, who went with him. And one thing Paul remembered was he thought Ringo was in drag at the show. And if you think about it, there's the one where George is dressed up like that. So we're thinking it was probably the 19th, December of 63 show. So that would have been the first live interaction. Okay.
Interaction with the band itself. Okay. So he being did get to see them. Room. Okay.
Yeah, as a band. Wow. As a band. Yeah.
As a band. Okay. This is great. I'm learning a lot right here. So then, Andy, you said the November 73 would have been the first time that John and Elton would have interacted or met each other then, right?
Yeah, and that footage is in the John Lennon documentary, the Imagine film from 88. Okay. You see that video footage in that documentary.
That's right. Yeah. It's been
there.
A while.
But it's in there. So obviously that was where the spark was, and shortly thereafter, what else was that? And then One Day at a Time for Elton was later, but we'll get to that.
Right. So the sessions for Walls and Bridges came first then, I take it, because then later on, then they would have recorded together for Lucy in the Sky and with Diamonds and One Day at a Time. And then Caribou.
And go ahead, Chip. One Day at a Time, John was not on that.
No.
Interesting, because I read that he played guitar on that. Yeah.
No, only Lucy. Only I was telling
only
you.
Only Lucy.
Only Lucy.
Okay. Gotcha. Cool. We're talking about Walls and Bridges here. Elton does, obviously, he plays piano and does harmony vocals for vocals and piano for Whatever Gets You Through the Night, and then Hammond organ and backing vocals for Surprise, Surprise, Sweet Bird of Paradox. Chip, you've listened to Chip and Mark. Actually, obviously, you guys have listened to Whatever Gets You Through the Night before Elton John, joined in on that. In my opinion, that wouldn't have been a number one song if it wasn't for Elton joining that song, do you think?
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with you. I think it would have been a hit. I don't know that it would have been the huge, huge hit that it was, just because, it's sort of the, obviously it's a much better song than this, but, the say thing, where no way that would have been a number one hit without Michael Jackson on it, because he was the man of the moment. Same
right.
In 1974 with Elton. He was the guy in 1974. So to have Elton John on your record, it was like, guaranteed number one.
Right.
Same thing happened the next year with Neil Sedaka and Bad Blood, when, that would not have been the gigantic hit it was without Elton being on that record.
Right.
His presence automatically made it, a mega hit versus just a hit. I think it would have been, I think it would have been popular, but, John was not coming off a gigantic hit after Mind Games. Mind Games was not, as a single, was not that big a hit, and the album, went in the top 10, but it wasn't enormous. It was like number 8, and then didn't go any further. Short chart run. So certainly, without Elton's presence on that, and in Walls and Bridges, the album later hitting number one. Yeah, I don't see both of those hitting number one without Elton's presence.
Right. Yeah, I tend to agree. Elton could do no wrong. Then, 73, 74, 75, he was just, maybe even 76 as well, but I'm just on fire.
Yeah. I don't think people can really, unless it's sort of like the Beatles thing, unless you were there during that time, you really have no idea how huge Elton John was in that three-year period. It was truly, the closest thing to the Beatles that had happened at the, up to that point since the Beatles. I mean, he was omnipresent, without a doubt. Mm.
And for good reason.
Yeah, right. Well, he was on fire, artistically as well. That's the thing, was, that run of records, those albums from, Don't Shoot Me Through Rock of the Westies.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing run of music as well. So.
Yeah.
I agreed. So then a couple months later in November, then John goes to Caribou Ranch, which is was that Colorado?
Colorado, yeah.
Yeah, that's where Chicago recorded a bunch of their albums. Then, Elton John, they record Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and then obviously then the B-side One Day at a Time. But John does do guitar and backing vocals on Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Not a lot of people can say they have a number one covering a Beatles song or a Lennon McCartney song. Is there? I think this is the only time that a Beatles cover went to number one. Would that be correct?
Mark's our chart guy. Boy.
As a Beatles, other than, obviously, you have Lennon McCartney songs that went to number one, Roll Without Love.
Exactly, right.
That they didn't record. But as far as a Beatles cover,
there might have been
other stars on 45.
Right. But, but Joe Cocker's With a Little Help, I don't recall that. Maybe that went to number one in the UK, but I don't know if that went to – I should have looked that up before we recorded. But I know that did well as well.
But, yeah, not a number one song. So, yeah, the Elton holds that distinction for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So then Whatever Gets You Through the Night goes to number one, and we all know the story how John Lennon, promised Elton that he performed the song with him live, and then he fulfills that promise on Thanksgiving night. They at Madison Square Garden they do Whatever Gets You Through the Night. They do Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. They do I Saw Her Standing There, not necessarily in that order, but all three of those songs, I think, were released on that John Lennon anthology set, correct?
No. They made their first appearance for Lennon on the Lennon 1990 4-CD 90 box set.
That's it. Yep. Okay.
It was on that first. And then Chip and Mark have it in their notes here in the book. Obviously, it makes its appearance on an Elton CD on the expanded Here and There double CD, which was just as the original LP was only four or five songs on each side, one from London and one from New York. But the expanded two CD live edition of that album has those three songs. It's the full concert. It's on there. It's on that whole New York, that whole performance from November 28th is on that second disc, including those three songs.
It includes the encore, The Bitch Is Back, where John came out and was bashing a tambourine.
Right. So if you're looking for a more complete version of that concert, the Elton CD, live CD, is the go-to place for that. For those as well.
Right. Now, Chip, what's that, Mark?
It was the first time all three of them showed up was in 81 after John passed. It came out as an EP. That was the first time all three of the tracks came out for public consumption.
Okay.
And they've also been remixed and remixed and remixed. They were issued on Elton CD singles in the 90s.
Right.
So it's they've been well traveled.
But that shortly, I have your section of the book open now. So that was an Elton release where all the tracks were Dick James Music issued a 12-inch single of all. So this was it was an Elton release, not a John release. This was Elton putting it out shortly after John's.
Okay. Cool. Chip, maybe you can talk on this for a second because of, thanks for the Lennonology book, but it's kind of a misconception that people think that Lennon and Yoko got back together that night to where they just really met that night, right? They still didn't actually get back together until early next year, or early the following year.
That's exactly right. And, you know, they were in touch quite a bit throughout the separation. But that seemed like a good foundation for a story. And then Bob Gruen was there and took a great shot. And Elton has now adopted it as his history of the event. But no, you're right. They didn't reunite until late January, early February of 1975. Okay.
Yes.
Are you familiar with the Chris Selovic interview from 86 where Paul says that, you know, Yoko came to him to help them try to get back together? Paul went to California and you know, and talked to John about, hey, look, man, you know, if you want her back, you got to go to her and court her and stuff like that.
That rang true. And I'm fairly certain when it is in Lennonology. But that's been quite a while since that was prepared, so I can't tell you for certain if it is in the book or not. But no, Yoko came back. She saw Aunt Mimi as well, mm-hmm. you know, trying to figure out how to make this work.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so then we move on to 82, May of 82, with the song Empty Garden. Unless there was something else in between that point in time that one of you guys would have for John.
You know, that John and Elton were label mates. In 1980, Elton and John were both among the first signings to Geffen Records.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, and that was a big deal at the time with Elton moving from MCA, where he'd been, you know, since originally on UDI, which then became MCA, but he'd been there for his entire career, and he moved to Geffen. And then, of course, John and Yoko were signed for Double Fantasy. But then Elton played in September of 80. We've got the date here. What is that? September
13th, the concert in the park, yeah.
Played a huge concert in Central Park and played Imagine at that, at that show. And then Chip can kind of take it from there as far as Chip. Was there a meeting like after that?
No, that's what was really odd, is that he was just over in the park and never came made any contact. You know, that after the Madison Square Garden concert in 74, it was probably Elton's 1976 tour. And, a guy spotted John in a shoe store and went in and asked him if he was going to play with Elton while he was here. Hmm. And John said, no, the artist has not requested my presence.
Hmm.
So I don't know if it was falling out, but it was a fantastic, you know, response.
Hmm. Interesting.
Definitely, I mean, you know, Elton is Sean's godfather. You know, that's
right.
Bring up. So that's, you know, right after John was, or after Sean was born, Elton was named his godfather, and you know, Elton gave John a gift in 79 for his 39th birthday. Gave John an electric piano.
Okay.
So there was definitely a touch, sort of, during those years, but there was no great visit during the
Dakota years.
That's right.
Yeah. Interesting.
That piano is a Yamaha CP70, which has a very distinct electronic piano sound. It's not like a Fender Rhodes. It sounds more like a piano, and you'll hear it on several of John's Dakota demos.
Okay.
He's using that piano.
Right. The track Empty Garden has like another kind of Beatles connection, as it was produced by Chris Thomas, who, you know, as we know, worked with Paul on Back to the Egg, and then several different, you know, attempts to get a Cold Cuts release out, you know, and then also working with the Beatles during the White Album too, I believe. So, anything else for John before we move on to the next?
One other thing is Elton went to the Pinner Fair in May of 69, and he, He won two goldfish. And he named them John and Yoko.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, okay. I read that in his book. Yeah.
And unfortunately, they died the next day.
Right. I hadn't seen it yet, but the Elton John bio movie that came out a few years back, wasn't there a scene where he saw a picture of John Lennon and he changed that's why he got the name John, the last name of John? And that's not accurate, correct?
No, not accurate at all.
No.
No.
John Baldry, long John Baldry.
That's why he has the name John, right?
Right.
That's where the John came from.
Right. Yeah. So, more Hollywood BS.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to Paul.
The one that he's had the least amount of work with.
Well, right. Yeah, I guess you could say that because
I mean, no, it's a good question to pose to Chip and Mark. It's just after working so closely with John, Paul and Elton were never going to really kind of just collaborate a whole lot. They just were two different kind of artists, Yeah, they mingled, I'm sure, a little bit there in the 70s at various functions and awards and stuff, but to get together and collaborate on music, Paul is one way and Elton's the other. And to get them to what are you guys' thoughts on, could that have happened, McCartney and Elton really truly collaborating? I can't see it.
No, I can't see it either.
The egos would not have worked. on the Macca side, I think Elton would have loved the opportunity, but as we've seen with Paul over the years, he doesn't do particularly well with big name collaborators who he would see as a peer. He'd rather other than people like Elvis Costello, who obviously he's a peer, but he came along later. You know what I'm saying? It's right. It would not have worked. But I am surprised at some point or another that later in their careers that there wasn't some kind of collaboration, but certainly not in the 70s and 80s. That was
right.
No, right.
Never gonna happen.
Well, Elton tagged Paul late. He didn't get to perform live with him until Live Aid. And the finale at Live Aid, that was their live appearance together.
Yeah.
Live Aid first. Okay.
It was the first one.
Live Aid first. Okay. So then Live Aid, that was 85, right?
85. July of 85.
All right. So then we would move to June of 86 for the Prince's Trust concert.
That's right.
Which both would perform at as well. It's been, I don't think I've seen it since 86 or 87 when they, I think they aired it on one of the cable TV, cable stations, back then. Again, I think did they perform together for the encore? Was it Get Back, or were they on the stage together for that?
Yeah. Well, Elton was one of the musicians on that, that entire show. So, there was a band. It wasn't
right.
And Elton was a member of that band playing keyboard. Mm. So it was kind of like Phil Collins was there playing for all the artists,
right,
et cetera. So yeah, they performed together, but it wasn't like Elton and Paul up front singing together.
No.
Right.
Piano on Paul's songs. So. Mm.
And actually, there was I should have said this first. There's a bootleg of Elton out there called the Spirit in the Sky, it's rare sessions from 69 to 70 where he covers the track Come and Get It. Have any of you heard that before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Elton made was making his money at that point as a session musician.
Okay.
So they'd go in, and over in the UK, these compilation records with sound-alike artists are very big over there. Mm. So Elton became one of the artists that was in the house band or whatever, and he did a lot of lead vocals on songs too. Mm. And I think Mark, what's the what was it, a Moody Blues song?
Get Just, Question.
question turned up with Elton on the lead vocals. So there are maybe, 25, 30 of those tracks?
Yeah. With him on either lead vocals or backing vocals, where it's very evident that it's him. But you can tell, I mean, even though he was somewhat good at mimicry, he turns them all into Elton John songs. They're a lot of fun. They're very recording.
No, I mean it's a pretty faithful rendition of the song, but it just feels a little bit more upbeat.
Yeah.
So, and I like it. I thought his vocals were pretty good on that as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll move up to then September of 97 for this for the music for Montserrat, performing Hey Jude. Elton John shares vocals with Paul and Sting for that, and they kind of, like, I don't know, was this before Billy Joel and Elton John did their piano thing? Because it looked like they were face to face.
Billy and Paul Elton have been doing that for a couple of years already. Those face to face
tours. Well, were they already doing that? Okay.
Yeah. Wait for that. A couple of years.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. They had already been doing that for a while.
Gotcha. Got you. But I thought that was a pretty good version. I thought Elton handled that his verse fairly well.
Yeah, he only just takes the second verse, but it's the only really time you see the two of them actually playing, together on the same song and sharing a vocal. So that's it's pretty unique for the two of them just for that moment alone, really, just for Hey Jude.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am kind of surprised that he didn't cover some other Paul stuff, I guess, throughout his career. Like, I would have thought that Elton would have made a good musician to be on the Art of McCartney covers CD. I thought he could probably handle some kind of piano, driven track or something like that,
It's the ego thing. It's the ego thing. Elton's not going to do a Paul solo song. He's just not going to do it.
No.
Is Paul going to do an Elton song? No, they're not.
No, but Paul's, I think, on a whole. I mean, Elton had a small, window of greatness where, Paul has had, many, many years of greatness.
There's Elton fans that could say this. They feel that Elton's greatness is as good as Paul's solo greatness. Plenty of hardcore Elton fans that feel the same way as McCartney fans do. So, That's just the nature of the beast. There's plenty of fans that, think that what he did in the 80s or the 90s is just as good as we might like the 70s Elton stuff more, but there are plenty of Elton John fans who support everything that he's done. So,
Well, yeah, there's an argument to be said that he had a stronger 80s than Paul, a lot more, I think, chart success in the 80s than what Paul had. Anyways, moving on with George.
We had one more Paul.
One more Paul? Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Chip. You got it, Andy? Go ahead.
No, you take it. You got it. You're the guest. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Concert for New York City.
Yep. Yes, that's right. Yep.
And there might have been a few recent paparazzi shots where they've seen them at the same party since then, but don't know of any other musical interaction. So on to George.
Well, one final thing on a technicality, although I don't think Elton's performance was pre-recorded for this, but they're both on the bill for the party at the Palace in 2002. Paul was at that as well. And Elton recorded and sang I Want Love, but it was pre-recorded inside the castle. Elton didn't sing that on the stage at the party at the palace to commemorate in 2002. You've seen that video when they all do All You Need Is Love at the end with Rod Stewart's up there and Cliff Richard and Ozzy, and they're all singing it. But Elton, but Elton was on that bill. He just wasn't part of that performance.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. All right, moving on to George. Now, here's another one that didn't work with until later on. A little bit more work with actually, we have some recorded work here. You know, some live stuff as well. But first, I guess we could say would be, would it be June of 87, the Princess Trust, or would it be the recording sessions for Cloud Nine? What would we say would come first?
To go back a little further than that.
Okay.
Mark, you remember the guest appearance?
Yeah, the there's the guest appearance. You're talking about the Clapton one?
Right.
78?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So at, in Guildford, Surrey, December of 78, he appeared with George and Eric at the Rolling Hotel. So that would be the first musical interaction. Although George did send a telegram to Elton when Elton was playing the Fillmore in November of 70, and George did send him a telegram to congratulate him on his success.
Oh, cool!
So that was actually the first George Elton interaction. But played together in 78. There's also reported live performance with him in March of 82 in Australia that he sort of popped on stage with Elton, but there's been no evidence that actually happened. I think it's a rumor. Okay.
A rumor that came from the Beatles Monthly.
Yes.
Letters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, I don't believe it. A rumor from the Beatles Monthly? I don't believe it.
So Andy, look up the Cloud Nine sessions and see when that would have started. If that would have been before, that probably would have been before June of 87. Then when the Prince's Trust concert.
Cloud Nine sessions, according to Chip and Mark, go from January of 87 to August of 87, and Prince's Trust.
Elton's work on that was in January of 1987. So it was
January. It was early because the Prince's Prince's Trust is not until June of 87.
Right. Yes.
So he did Cloud. Well, Tom and I were talking last night about Cloud Nine, and I had that album as a kid. And my only kind of association with Elton John on that album is that you see the photo of the band with Eric and Elton in the photo sleeve of Cloud Nine. And Tom was like, "Are you sure he's on that?" And I'm like, "I know he's on that. I know he's on Cloud Nine. Somewhere he is." And then Tom looked up the credits. Just to double check what he actually played on, and Tom looked it up for Cloud Nine.
And he Elton cameoed in the video for When We Was Fat.
When We Was Fat, right. But that would have been 80, that would have been 88. That was
December of 87 when he shot his part of that.
Okay. Right. At least in 88 then.
Dropping the coin in the cup.
Yeah.
Coin. Yeah.
Carrying the Imagine album.
Right. Right. And that, there was your reunion, right? Reunion.
Yeah. So he did play electric piano on Cloud Nine, piano on Devil's Radio, and then piano on Wreck of the Hesperus. And then, yes, obviously, then appearing in the When We Was Fab video, and again, just, you know, walking through, which is, you know, which is fun. But, you know, it's cool that he also recorded with George as well. It seems to me that those two would have got on together, you know, a lot better than probably him and Paul.
Yeah. Chip and Mark, do you think that Ringo came in? Go ahead, Mark.
Wait, go ahead, Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
You know, Elton played with George after a pretty rough time in Elton's life. You know, this was right after he did those Australian dates and he had to have throat surgery. You know, if you'll recall the live in Australia, he's pretty
rough. Love that record. Yeah.
And so he had. You know, he could basically, you know, couldn't record, couldn't do anything for a while as far as using his voice. So that, you know, those Cloud Nine sessions are right after that all happened. So
okay,
going back to being a session musician, for that period of time. And so it's interesting how that all sort of came about. He was trying to sort of get his life together, though that didn't really happen until 1990. But you know, he was sort of going through that process during the recording. Red Strikes Back album came out in 1988. So, you know,
right.
Elton was going through sort of a you know, transitional period. And I think playing with George, playing with Eric, that was a, you know, a healing time for him as well. So
now, obviously, I was just going to ask you, what do you think kind of brought Elton into George's world there for that? Was it through Ringo, or was it through Eric Clapton? Because obviously Eric used, you know, they've all used Ray Cooper as a percussionist. So, you know, what was the common denominator to link Elton up with George at this time? Was it Ray Cooper? Was it Ringo? Because Ringo and Elton were a little bit more tighter. You know, what do you guys think kind of clued them in together at this point, at this juncture?
It could have been any of those, you know, yeah. Ray Cooper.
My vote goes to Ray Cooper.
Yeah.
Because yeah. You know, Ray Cooper obviously co-produced several tracks with George for Somewhere in England.
Somewhere in England, right. You
know, they were tight. And so that would be where my, you know, and then, yeah, certainly Elton and Clapton having played together live some would, you know, would make that happen as well. So, but yeah, my vote goes with Ray Cooper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds pretty logical. Yeah.
Right. So if there was nothing else in between that in 2002, then you see Elton John perform the song Something at the Rainforest Benefit Concert at Carnegie Hall again in 2002, which, you know, might not be the best cover of that song that I've heard, but, you know, I thought he did okay with that.
But that's pretty much it. George.
And again, you know, Elton, you know, you think about the, you know, the one show that everybody was at, he wasn't at the concert for George, right? You know, him and Bob Dylan, you know, maybe more so Bob not being there, but Bob was on tour.
That was the biggie, the big surprise, that he did not do that, but Elton not so much. I mean,
right. Like it would have been nice, but I mean, Bob not being there. Right. Right.
It wasn't like a career-long relationship. So.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Plus, they had Gary Brooker. He did a fantastic job. So George, now we move on to Ringo, which, you know, I don't have a lot here. I mean, I hopefully you guys got some other stuff too that I might not have here, but would the first thing be the Goodnight Vienna sessions?
No,
actually it goes quite a lot more. Back to Ringo. Mark, did he produce Born to Boogie? Or direct it?
No, he was just part of. That's another example of Elton playing session musician.
Okay.
Mark Bolan, T-Rex, when they were when Ringo direct. Are you talking about Elton or?
I'm talking about Ringo directing Born to Boogie, live stuff.
The film, yeah.
Ringo did direct Born to Boogie. Okay. And produced it as well. So.
And as part of that, there was this jam session with Bolan and Ringo and Elton.
Okay.
I think it was at Apple.
Yeah.
And what did they do? The Children of the Revolution. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Was that 72 or 73?
That was 72, May of 72.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha.
And then the Goodnight Vienna sessions with Snooker.
Goodnight with Snooker Roo, right. which was co-written Elton and Bernie, piano by Elton, and you hear his count in for that song as well, correct?
Yeah, it was Elton's band.
Yeah. Okay.
For it.
Hmm.
Although, and yep, does have a very spirited count in on that.
Right.
Go ahead.
Mark.
What? No, I've got the guy.
Okay. Okay. Andy?
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, I don't think it's documented anywhere, but it's probably not inconceivable that Ringo had to be somewhat, you know, in the area, like when the Ringo album was being produced in 73 in L.A. I mean, he had to have been, you know, obviously, John, you know, I'm the greatest. And I don't know if it was ever documented that he was, but, you know, around or part of that. But, I mean, George is out there. It's, you know, it's certainly plausible to think that maybe Elton was aware of that they were all helping out Ringo before, because obviously, you know, Goodnight Vienna, he does Snookaroo for. So maybe he was aware that was going on.
Well, at that time, Elton was either touring or recording.
Okay.
Yeah, a little too early in 73.
Yeah.
For them, you know, for that connection to have been made during the Ringo album. But
was later.
To me, the interesting thing is that given, again, how huge Elton was in 1974, and certainly John had to have been aware of that, the fact that Snookaroo was not issued, you know, as a single for that record is pretty amazing.
Well, it was in the UK.
Here, in the UK, where it didn't chart. Right.
You know, right.
Why that was not issued is completely beyond me. But
now you've got a free track written by, performed by,
right,
the hottest property in music at that time.
So
at that time,
obviously an Elton John song. You know, there's just, you know, no getting around that. So yeah, I was always like, why on earth did they not issue that as a single in the U.S.? I mean, it would have been huge. But,
I think it would have been huge for Elton. Were they asked to do a song for Ringo, or was this was it going to be an Elton song, or, you know, what was this kind of the story of Ringo getting this song? Do we know?
No, that's a good question.
Okay. It was written for Ringo. With that much,
okay.
But as far as who asked, who made the connections and so forth, that much we don't know. But it was absolutely written for Ringo and not meant to be an Elton song.
It was probably Tony King again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was the guy they shared in common with their, you know, that was the link between the Beatles and Elton, really, was Tony King. That was the guy.
Hmm. Okay.
He's the one that brought him into their circle.
Yeah, and Elton. If you read Elton's autobiography, he met Tony King is all over that book. He's mm-hmm. in it quite a lot.
So would there be anything in between that and then June of 87 for the Prince's Trust concert?
They hung out a lot together in 75, and in 76 when. 75 when Elton was putting together the new band, they were rehearsing in Amsterdam, and Ringo was there and saw the rehearsals and wanted to be part of the band.
Interesting.
And John Reed, who was Elton's manager and Livin, got the short straw and had to tell Ringo that no, he couldn't go on tour with Elton.
A quick Elton related question to that period. Why do you think Elton broke the band up for at that time? Why did he change direction there with Rock of the Westies with the band?
I can't imagine why they would have broken up such a
they were just
great engine.
Right. Why there to derail to derail it?
In his autobiography, that it's just during that time, Elton was pretty mercurial, and you know, would make a lot of decisions sort of on the spur of the moment. I think that they showed that they did in London. It was that huge show where they played all of Captain Fantastic.
Oh, before it was out, before it was released, yes.
From front to back, it had just come out. And But the problem was that the Beach Boys opened up for that, and I think the Eagles run it. It was a huge day-long show, and Beach Boys blew Elton off the stage.
I think
that was a real turning point for Elton in terms of looking at the band. And he made a spur-of-the-moment decision that he obviously rethought later. Because he brought them all back between 80 and 82. They, one by one sort of came back until they recorded all together in 83, 82 and 83 for Too Low for Zero.
Right.
And that was turned to form and, that original band.
But Davey was the one consistent on all their albums. He kept Davey throughout, right?
Davey was not there in 1980 and 81.
Okay.
Because he was touring with Meatloaf.
Right.
Oh.
He's not a part of Elton's sphere. Like, if you see that Central Park concert, the one, the one I mentioned earlier, and the one where
he
has the Donald Duck outfit, Davey's not on that show. Nigel and Dee are back. They're playing with him. But who's the guitarist on that, Chip? Do you remember?
It's Richie Zito, isn't it?
No, that's right. Yeah, for Richie Zito. Yeah.
Cool. It's kind of surprising in a way that, you don't see Elton John on another Ringo record, whether it's just like one piano bit here or there, because it seemed like, it seemed like those two would, would mesh nicely together on just like a deep cut, here and there on one of his albums, especially now.
I'll agree with you there, because it seems like Elton turns up on, there's barely an artist that Elton hasn't turned up on their record playing piano, so why not Ringo?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Might be a clash between managements, too, that it never even gets to the artist to see if he wants to do it or not.
Yeah.
But, he could have, but then just, changed his name like John, would do so many times.
Yeah,
Winston Ono Boogie or whatever it was.
And you're talking guys with egos, too. They're all going to have their periods where they might be pissy with each other or whatever. And Elton clearly had his dark days there before he got sober. And, the timing.
So Ringo.
Right, and Ringo, too. I mean, the Michelob or the wine cooler commercials, come on.
The wine
cooler. So, there wasn't going to be the stars were never always going to align for these collaborations. So when they did, it was pretty special.
Yeah. So I guess we can say then in June of 87, the Prince's Trust concert would be the last connection between John or Ringo and Elton John as a live performer or a studio musician then.
You could say that.
There is one more.
Okay, let's hear it.
There was a benefit in Mougin, France.
Okay.
Elton and Sharon Stone and Ringo got up and performed.
There's a trio for you.
May of 98.
That's out there on video.
May of 98?
What? 98.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll have to look that up. And what was that for? Benefit for again?
I couldn't tell you at this time.
Okay.
Mark knew it.
We'll have to look that up.
Yeah, we'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, cool. Well, this was excellent. Thank you guys for joining us for this. Anything else you want to add before Andy?
Not much. Chip, when are you going to see Elton?
The 30th.
Oh, okay. This month.
So this will be the third final show I've seen.
Are you a guy that looks at the set list before the show and knows what it is going through, or do you go in blind?
Are you asking me or Chip?
Asking both you.
Both of you guys.
Okay. Both of you guys.
I tend to not look at set lists ahead of time. Unfortunately, with Elton, his set lists have gotten a bit static on this tour. So
it has.
But that's why I decided my first farewell show would be my last farewell show.
Okay.
Yeah, that was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah,
years. That's right. Yeah, I was with the catering company when it was one of the first shows he did for that farewell tour was out here in Arizona, and we worked that show. Unfortunately, I didn't actually get to go to it though, but looking forward to the one here in November.
That's why I said it was such a terrific show. I really enjoyed it, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to leave it at that. I'm good with not seeing him again. And that can truly be my farewell Elton concert. So.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Chip, how about you? That's good.
I don't have the resolve. I figure I'll look back and regret if I didn't go to see him when I had the opportunity. So, whenever he gets around here.
Chip and I are different in that respect because Chip's that way with Paul. Right. The way that I am with Elton, like I have to see Paul every time that he's close.
Right.
And Chip has missed many fairly close ball shows.
Yeah.
So we're kind of different in that respect.
Right.
You've got one deep cut on the whole set list for this tour. Anybody want to take a guess?
Oh, yeah. Mercy on the Criminal.
Oh, okay. You know it then. Okay.
You know, they cut four great songs out of that set and
what
replaced them. I wrote it down somewhere. Mark, do you recall or?
I don't recall.
I know Indian Sunset was one of the ones that got cut.
Yes.
All the Young Girls Love Alice got cut, which is a crime.
That's a shame. Damn shame. Yeah,
and there were two other ones, and then they replaced it with his Dua Lipa duet. Oh,
yeah, the encore.
Yeah. So,
well, you know what, though?
The infamous law of diminishing returns comes along. It's like, my last go around with Elton be less than the first last go around with Elton. So.
Well put.
There you go. Yeah, and you get the one clunker out of the way early because with that Benny and the Jets as an opener, you get that out of the way early. Thank God.
Yeah.
I collect Elton shows like I do Paul shows.
Right,
so that's cool. That's awesome. That's awesome. Are you guys working on anything that that you guys want to talk about now, or are you guys just taking it easy from writing at the moment?
Mark,
I'm looking at retirement, but not
okay.
Stuff from my job, my day job.
Okay. Cool.
So after that happens, we'll see. You never know what's going to happen. So I'm looking forward to being able to devote all of my time to the thing I love most, which is music. So
cool.
We'll see.
We'll like that. Chip?
I'm looking to wrap up my work history as well here. So maybe I'll have more time to devote to some of the Lennonology projects. I haven't, the publishing industry has changed so much in just the 5 years since it came out compared to the 20 plus years that Eight Arms came out. People don't necessarily have to have physical media anymore. And when you get into digital distribution, you sell one copy and then it's out there. The only way to manage that is to pre-sell it and to release it to everybody at the same time.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
So I haven't decided on a delivery method yet for the Lennonology for the remaining stuff. Cause there's just some amazing things out there that people have no idea of.
Oh man. Wow.
And I'd like to be able to write that history, but I'm just not sure of the best way to deliver it.
Gotcha. Cool. Excellent.
So,
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I got to make room in the basement though to print that second one. So go and,
yes, there you go. Lennonology. Yes. We'll also post it. When we post this episode, we'll put the link in there and then people can just click on the link and head right there and buy a copy or get the digital version of or the PDF of Eight Arms to Hold You. Because, again, I, the The Leninology book is wonderful, and the Eight Arms to Hold You is essential, and it's a must read if you are a.
We do hold it.
Yes, yes, yes. We show this a lot during the show.
We hold it. Look, 20 something years, it's holding up pretty good. It's got a little. It's a little torn.
There you
go. It's a little worn. It's a little bit beat up.
You need to have Chip find one in the basement for you so you can buy a new copy or something.
I would if he finds one, because it's one.
This is my markup set.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I'm going the wrong way with it, but, yeah. You know, when we did the electronic version, we incorporated all these notes that I'd made over 20 years of things that need to get tweaked.
Gotcha. Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you, gentlemen. As always, you can find Two Legs on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. There's the website, twolegspodcast.com. Please check out our YouTube channel, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney Podcast. We're really getting close to that 1,000 subscriber goal, and this is actually where you're going to find all of our beautiful faces and see all the goodies that we like to show. And in a side note, too, if you're looking for the Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and the One Day at a Time, you can find it as bonus cuts on the CD version here of Captain Fantastic. And Andy, anything else before we sign off?
Not much. Thank you, Chip, and thank you, Mark. Always a pleasure, guys.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Yep, we really appreciate you guys. Yep. And everybody out there, as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.